there, and welcome to the Transparently Jordan podcast, where I'll be talking with a new guest each week, and we'll be covering topics in health, fitness, lifestyle, and so much more. So stick around, and let's get into today's episode.
Radiant Voices Media.
Mental health is the same in that it's sort of like on a sliding scale, really. And on one side, you've got like, really good mental health. And on the other side, you might have, you know, like mental illness. And there's this whole scope of you know, gray in the middle of where you might fall. And lots of different things can impact where your mental health is.
What is going on, everybody, and welcome to another episode. Don't really have much to share, to be honest. I'm kind of going through an interesting period right now where I'm kind of transitioning. I have recently given up my position as a physiotherapist with the clinic that I've been working on, or working, I should say, with for the last while, me being here in Adelaide. I've kind of decided that I am going to be focusing on some other projects, this podcast being one of them. Of course, can't have done any of this without you guys listening. So thank you all so much for making this possible, for allowing me to do this and make this switch. I, of course, am still a physio. I'm still going to be a physio, but I'm kind of taking the next couple of months as a little bit of a break. So I guess that's a little bit of a life update with me. I, of course, am still training, have maybe 10 weeks to go. I think just under 10 weeks. If you haven't tuned into my previous episodes, I have mentioned this numerous times already. I am running 7 back-to-back marathons this coming July, July 1st until July 7th. I am starting in Perth and I am ending in the Gold Coast. Yes, you heard that correct. That is one marathon every single day, 42.25 kilometers or something like that. I've run so many marathons, I should know that. But one marathon every day for 7 days. I am starting Perth. The second marathon is here in Adelaide, so I will be down in Glenelg. If you are here on a Tuesday in Adelaide, I think, what is it, July 2nd, definitely come down. You can run with me or the rest of the National Australian Running Team. We'll all be down here doing the event. You can, of course, sign up for the event individually. You can run the whole marathon. You can run a half marathon. You can run a 5K or a 10K, I believe. You have those options as well. All of the proceeds go to the charity Bravehearts. Amazing charity, works with child sexual abuse survivors, helps to prevent it, helps with treatment, things like that. So definitely head to the show notes. You can click the link to donate as well. I am raising money. This is a fundraiser. That's why I'm running the 7 marathons. So you can definitely support that there. Other than that, nothing really interesting to share. I've had kind of an interesting 24 hours. I've just flown back from Brisbane. I was in Brisbane working with a few brands, and there's some interesting things coming up. I have never kind of done that before, so it's all new to me. Can't really say much more about that, but look forward to that, hopefully. And let's get into today's episode. Today's episode is with Lisa Scanlon from here in Adelaide. She is a mental health advocate. She has a podcast, High Tide, Low Tide, where she has guests come on and chat about their mental health story. She is going to share her story with you all today as well, which is quite a powerful story, so tune in on that. She's also a bodybuilding competitor. She does a lot of other things. She'll definitely get into that in the beginning of today's episode, but tune on in and let's get started.
Hey, you guys, Elite Supps Australia is your one-stop shop for all of your supplement needs. It has all of the major brands, ranging from EHP Labs to Optimum Nutrition to Body Science to Faction Labs. They have it all. Be sure to shop online at elitesupps.com.au and use code JORDAN10 to save yourself a little money. That is code JORDAN10, JORDAN10, to save yourself some money. Thanks, you guys.
All right, you guys, we are here with Lisa. Welcome to the podcast, Lisa. How are you going today?
I'm going really well, thank you. And I am really excited to be here. So thank you for the invitation on this lovely Tuesday.
Yes, no worries. Thanks for coming right after work. That's that's always a thing, big day of work and then, you know, spending your evenings. So thank you for doing that. But Lisa, if you don't mind, maybe getting into just who you are, kind of what you do and introduce yourself a bit.
Sure. So yes, my name is Lisa Scanlon. I am 36. I had to think about that for a second. 36 years old and have lived for most of my life here in Adelaide, actually not too far from where we are now. For my job, I work for a coffee company as a sales rep. So that means I get to be out and about for a lot of the day and just making sure that the people of Adelaide are caffeinated well, which is very important. Outside of that, I compete in bodybuilding. And also, I'm very involved in the mental health space. So I'm a lived experienced guest speaker, and I talk through my experiences with depression, anxiety, and self-harm. And I also produce and host my own podcast called High Tide, Low Tide, which is a story sharing platform for people to come on and talk through their journey. And, you know, the more stories we have out there, the better for people to connect into.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, lots going on. So that's great. And quite busy in that regard as well. But yeah, we'll definitely delve into the bodybuilding, you know, the mental health space and all that. Coffee is amazing. I find like people here in Adelaide are quite snobby about the coffee, so you need to have good beans and things like that. I find it interesting. I lived on a coffee bean farm for a bit, so I always find like the roasting, all of those like tedious things, quite interesting in that regard as well. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, Lisa, I mean, I wanted to get you on the podcast because, of course, you have your own podcast, you know, in the same space, mental health awareness and whatnot. And I think just having, like we were chatting before, just having people's stories out there, I think there's others listening that can resonate potentially and, you know, get some things from today's episode. So that's kind of why I wanted you here. Thanks for coming on here and whatnot. But maybe start with your journey, if you don't mind. Like, I know you were from Adelaide, you were saying, from local. So where did it all begin for you?
Yeah, so I think for me, when I think about my story and where it all started, I probably would go back to high school. So I grew up in a two-parent household. We lived fairly well. So, you know, almost like from the get-go, coming from a place of privilege, you know, my family was fairly average. Mum, dad, three kids, middle child. So schooling was great. I had a great set of friends and I did really well. And then I think it was probably coming into year 12. It's like something just started to change. So, you know, I started to sort of withdraw from wanting to go out and spend time with my friends. I started finding it really hard to concentrate at school. And just the thought of like leaving the house started to become more and more difficult. Like it just would, at the time I didn't know what anxiety was, but obviously in reflection, you know, I was very anxious about what was happening and who I might run into when I leave. And that sort of continued probably for for a long time, but you know, for another year or so. I'd finished year 12 and I had so left school and started in a part-time job. And I would come home from work and I would just get into bed and I wouldn't want to get out until, you know, I was living at home. So mum would cook dinner and so I'd get out for dinner and then I'd come straight back into bed. And I had no idea what was going on. And this just snowballed and got worse and worse over time. And, you know, I was probably my own worst enemy at that time, about how, I guess, how I was thinking and the things that I was saying to myself. And, you know, I often tell the example of one time I went to play tennis with my high school boyfriend. And he was very good at sports in general. And, you know, I had other talents, but it was just like a nice day. And we're like, let's just go down and have a little bit of fun. And we went down to the courts and, you know, he would serve it over to me and I just could not hit it back. So I would either miss the ball or I would hit it and it would go the complete opposite direction of where I wanted it to go. And, you know, rather than just having a mindset of, oh, like, it doesn't matter, this is just for fun, or, you know, just give it another try, what my brain and my train of thoughts would do is they would go, you're not good at this, you're not good at tennis, you're actually not good at any sport, you're not good at anything, and no one likes you, no one thinks you should be here, you know, the world would be a better place without you. So, you know, it would go from a game of tennis to me feeling like I didn't deserve to be here. So that was a huge, you know, impact on my life. But I just had no idea that any of this was happening, really, because you just hear the things that you're like, that are going on inside of your mind, but you don't realize that you have any control over it. So it got to the point, obviously this continued on for a really long time, and I didn't know how to control what was happening within my mind, and I had started to self-harm. So that was probably where it got to its worst. And at no point did I like not want to be here. It wasn't about, you know, suicidal ideation or anything like that. It was just that it was a coping mechanism for me at the time because I didn't know how to deal with it any other way. And it got to the point, I'm very close with my mom, and she had noticed, obviously, that things had started to change for me. And she brought that up with me one day, and I can remember her talking to me in my bedroom, and it was a very soft conversation, and she just told me how much she loved me and that she'd noticed things had been different, and she suggested that we make an appointment to see a GP. Mm-hmm. And from there, I went on to see a psychologist. Mm-hmm. And started to get help.
Right. Okay. And this was all going around high school, you were saying?
Yeah, just after high school.
Okay. All right. Because that's, I think, like, that's quite interesting because that's where a lot of things stem from, you know, is high school and the experiences that you have, but not necessarily, I guess, the experiences or where it stems, but it's the age that I think a lot of people go through. Did you notice anything, you know, going out through your high school experience that brought this on, or was it just something that you noticed one day, really?
I think I didn't really notice any of it was happening, and I can't remember a specific thing occurring during high school that may have caused it. Obviously, I've done a lot of work on myself now, so I can probably relate it back to a lot of like early childhood things where maybe I didn't get the love or attention that I needed within the home at certain times, and that had an impact on my inner child, which carried through. But in terms of like recognizing what was going on, like, it wasn't until I got the help that I needed that I realized that there was anything wrong. And I often, you know, relate it back to, I wear contact lenses now, right? I didn't realize I needed glasses until I went to watch a football game with a friend of mine, and she took her glasses out so she could look out at the oval so she could see. And I thought, oh, like, ha, 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 like, give me your glasses. Let me see what I would look like with glasses on. And I put them on, and I was like, oh, my God, I can actually see what is happening on the field. So it wasn't until I got the help that I needed through the psychologist that I realized something was wrong, because it just happened so gradually over time that I just thought that's how life was. Yeah. You were just miserable and that was just normal.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's such a difficult thing to go through at that age as well, right? When you're already at that time trying to figure out who you are as a person. So that's so challenging there. But what did, I guess, the help look like? What did that whole process go from there?
Yeah. So at that time, we started working together through cognitive behavioral therapies, so CBT, which takes a look at, I guess, the thoughts that you're having. So you're bringing awareness to the thoughts that you're having, and then why you're having them, and then ways of, I guess, reprogramming that or changing that. A couple of years ago, I did a neuro-linguistic programming course as an adult, and I think it's quite similar, some of the things that you do. So I guess, you know, going back to that, I probably was now in my like late teens and into my early 20s, I started seeing the psychologist. I believe it was fortnightly to begin with, and then over time may have gone to monthly, and then every second month and whatnot. Medication for me at that time wasn't part of my recovery, but we just, yeah, really started to look at my thoughts and the way that my mind was working.
Yeah, yeah. And how long did it take? Because I know it can be quite an uphill and downhill battle for a lot. So what did that look like? Was it quite challenging in that regard?
I think there was probably like a solid period of maybe like a year or so where we were working really closely together. And then, like, you know, then it's just the rest of my life. Like, you know, mental health is something that we manage on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, the exact same way that we, you know, look after our physical health. And mental health is the same in that it's sort of like on a sliding scale, really. And on one side, you've got like, you know, really good mental health. And on the other side, you might have, you know, like mental illness. And there's this whole scope of, you know, gray in the middle of where you might fall. And lots of different things can impact where your mental health is. You know, maybe you've got lots of stress at work, or, you know, maybe you've been unwell, or you've had issues with family. And that is just something that, you know, you manage every day. And so, yeah, I think like the initial sort of, for lack of a better term, like recovery was maybe like a year or so. But, and if I think about in between now and then, there's been different ups and downs that, you know, where I would have slid more to one side of that scale.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I guess going back to, you know, when you're going through all this after high school, before the end of high school and whatnot, what were your support systems like back then? Because, you know, it sounds like you had, you know, a normal family in that regard and whatnot. But I think sometimes a lot of people that are going through this, you know, myself included, when I was in high school, kind of sometimes feel alone, if you know what I mean. So what did your support system look like, and how did that kind of scope where things went?
Yeah, and I think that's very true. It can be really isolating going through mental ill health. And, you know, if you think about when this was, so this would have been maybe like 2006, so quite a while ago. And if I'm being honest, like, I had never heard anybody talk about depression or anxiety then. And, you know, to have that diagnosis, I had no issues with being diagnosed with depression or anxiety, but I just didn't know anyone else. Yeah. And at that time, I was a little bit worried that saying that to, you know, a friend or someone else, that they, you know, had this picture that I'm going to be like in a straitjacket, like getting carried away. Because there was no conversations around it. And I believe there's been that's really changed in the last 20 years or so, which is great. Yeah. So I guess my main support system was my mom. I'm very, very close with her and so, so grateful for all that she's done. So she was the main person. And I can't really remember disclosing or like telling friends at the time. My high school boyfriend would have been told, obviously, we were still together then. But I think I always remember, so it was probably, it would have been early, maybe 20 or so at the time. And we used to always go down to the Ramsgate, which is at Henley. So there's a pub down at Henley on a Friday night. And there was a bartender there, and he was wearing one of, you know how everyone used to wear those like rubber wristbands for different charities and stuff? So he was wearing a Beyond Blue one, which is obviously a mental health organization within Australia. And I noticed that he had it on. And so it sparked a conversation because I felt safe to talk to him. And I think maybe I had had one at some point. And throughout that conversation, he told me about his own journey with mental health. And this was the first time in probably a couple of years that I didn't feel alone within my diagnosis. And that was a huge thing for me. And it's why I then went on to start doing lived experience guest speaking. And really, like, the reason why I started the podcast, because I just saw the power in him sharing his story with me, the power that it had for me. And I just wanted to be able to recreate that on as big a scale as I could.
Yeah, no, and that's awesome. Because I think, like you were saying, like, it is emerging, even now within like the last 5 years, you know, it's emerging a lot more. But back then, there was nothing really. So I'm sure that was quite a powerful thing. And even now, it's still a little bit hush hush, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. there's still a little bit of a stigma around it, which isn't the greatest, but I think to find people and to have that outlet is quite good. What was your 20s like then? So when you were kind of at that recovery stage and whatnot, what did that part of your journey look like?
Yeah, I think coming out of that first sort of year and starting to find myself again, I started doing lived experience guest speaking as my way of sort of giving back and trying to help other people. And so I probably had a good couple of years in there where I was doing really well and my mental health was great. And then there would have been definite like ebbs and flows and ups and downs throughout that time. And I think I've just had to learn how to, I guess, see the signs and symptoms or learn what my triggers are. Or, you know, if I start not wanting to go out, you know, is it because it's just getting colder or is it because maybe something's going on within me? So I was learning about myself, but I hadn't learned to love myself yet either.
Okay, because that's still an age where you are, like you were saying, finding yourself as well. So again, going through all of that at the same time was probably quite challenging. Did you find any ways that kind of helped you? You know, I think some people find that anchor in a sense, you know what I mean? Especially in your 20s, you're still learning about yourself and whatnot. Did you find anything at that age that really kind of honed you in, or was it not until later?
I would say, that's hard. I would say that probably I didn't learn to love myself until the last like 12 to 18 months, okay. If I'm really honest. Yep, so I've had a huge amount of growth in the last couple of years. Yep. I think when I think about my 20s and my late 20s, I really was trying to discover who I actually was, because I think we're kind of told subliminally who we're supposed to be. Through media, basically, if you think about all the TV shows we would have watched and that kind of thing. And I didn't feel like I really fit into those ideas. And so I actually I moved overseas in my late 20s. I went and I was living in Indonesia for 5 years. On a tiny little island off of Bali with no motor, with like no cars or anything like that. And I moved over there to become a scuba diving instructor. So the ocean has always been a big part of my life. And I think going over there and sort of teaching other people to love something that I love, I think that did a lot for me as well.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Like, I guess, again, for a lot of people, finding that thing is quite important. But that's quite interesting because I know, like, a lot of people are still trying to find themselves, still trying to, you know, get through anxiety or get through whatever it may be. Were there certain, I guess, traits that heightened or that were more heightened than others? I know, like, for myself, I'm a very anxious person. That probably triumphs anything and everything, really. Was there anything specifically that was for you, really?
Like a reoccurring thing for me.
Yeah.
Probably the biggest thing for me was around self-worth.
Okay. All right.
So I never felt good enough.
Mm.
Again, this comes back to a lot of stuff from like early childhood. So I feel like I have spent a considerable amount of my life, my adult life, trying to prove to who I'm not really sure that I'm good enough, that I'm worthy enough, that, like, you know, I'm giving back and, you know, I'm successful and, you know, I'm healthy and I'm fit.
Yeah.
And for a long time, it felt like I was, trying to prove something.
Yeah.
And I think, I hadn't really learned to love and accept myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until more recently.
Okay. All right. And was there anything recently that, I guess, changed that wanted you to go through these experiences?
I think, like, having come back home, so I had to move back to Adelaide during COVID. And, I came back here and I kind of, like, felt like I had lost my identity because part of who I was that I lived over in Indonesia and I was in the ocean every day and living this mermaid life. So I had to come back here and it's very different. Living over there is very communal and you're around people all the time. And so I had this big adjustment period of coming back here. And I just felt like, you know, after a couple of years of being here, I was probably the most lonely that I've ever been in my life.
Yeah.
And I just needed something to change. And so I started looking into neuro-linguistic programming, which I mentioned earlier. And I did a course in that, which just allowed me to bring a lot more awareness to myself and the things that I do, the choices that I make and why I do them and how I can learn to do something different instead, something that's going to serve me better instead, because telling myself I'm not good enough and I'm not worthy enough isn't serving me.
Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, if it's constantly in the back of your mind and if it's constantly something that you're telling yourself again and again, of course it's gonna just be there, right? So know that makes total sense. You coming back to Adelaide, that being quite lonely and whatnot, do you think that was because of the mindset that you were in, or do you think that it was because of Adelaide in general? You know, I hear that a lot, you know, me being an outsider as well. I'm from Canada. I moved here actually through COVID. And I think, like, Adelaide can be quite cliquey in a sense. Like, I feel like it's quite small and whatnot. Did that have anything to do with everything, or was it just simply like where your mind was at?
I think it was definitely a mindset thing for me.
Yep.
I think there is definitely some truth in the fact that, well, like, here people have families and they, you know, they spend evenings with their families and that's completely fine. That's great. Whereas on the island, most people are over there and they, you know, you spend all day in the dive shop with everyone and then you go out for dinner together. Yeah. It's just different.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did have definitely the mindset when I came back that, you know, it's hard to make friends in Adelaide, or, you know, there's no one around, or no one wants to spend time with me and whatever. And I actually had to work on changing that mindset, because if you are constantly telling yourself that, you know, no one wants to hang out with me, or, you know, it's hard to make friends, it's hard to make friends, it's hard to make friends, that's what you start to look for. So you're not going to see the opportunities that are in front of you. And so, you know, if I think about the last year, like, the number of friends I've actually been able to make as an adult has been incredible.
Yeah.
Like, at the gym. Yep. I have so many friends now at the gym.
Yeah.
Which is probably annoying for some people because I'm always up for a chat. But there's just so much truth in whatever it is you're telling yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's quite important, isn't it? Because exactly like you were saying, I think you can be in a place anywhere around the world and it is what you make. You know what I mean? Like there's so many different communities out there and you kind of have to put yourself out there in a sense. And I quite understand like there are things that are associated with that. Like if you're an anxious person or whatnot, it might be difficult to put yourself in those scenarios, but it is what you make in a sense, right? So that's, I think, a quite important thing that you mentioned there. What communities have you found, I guess, to help you through, or what communities are you part of now that have really changed things for you, I guess? So was there anything specifically, or was it more so like, you know, dabble in here or dabble in there?
I think I'm a little bit all over the place, okay, to be honest, yep, which I quite like. Yep. But definitely for me, the gym was a huge one. So I started at the gym that I'm at now probably about 18 months ago. And just it allows you to be in a space where people who are like-minded and have the same maybe goals or values. So that's been a huge one for sure, as well, because I'm at the gym 5 or 6 times a week. So I'm seeing the people who train at the same time as me 5 or 6 days a week, right? Which is more than I see my family.
Yeah. That's very true, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, more than I see my wonderful group of girlfriends, just because we're in the same place at the same time. So that was a huge one for me. And also, I have to say, I'm pretty lucky with my work as well. I work with some really wonderful people, and that's made a huge difference. Again, just because I'm at work 5 days a week, so you see those people really often. And yeah, I think, like, for me, I just think I can completely understand the anxiety side of things as an anxious person myself. But I just suggest to people to, you know, look at the things they enjoy doing, and is there a way of doing that with other people? Yeah. You know, whether it's a sport or a craft or, you know, an art of some kind, yeah, you know, is there a way of doing what you love, yeah, but with a group of people?
Yeah. And that's like, it's interesting from, you know, what you mentioned, you going to the gym, right? It's a very individual thing. Myself being a marathon runner, it's a very individual thing, right? But, you're in a community when you're in a gym. I feel like the gym is probably the one place that you can go to where there's nobody judging you in a sense. You know what I mean? Like you're all kind of working to better yourself or you have kind of a similar goal or whatnot. So putting yourself in those communities is quite helpful, I think, for a lot. But, you know, if you're in something that your individual, like you have your individual goal, just being around a community sometimes can change a lot of things. So that's quite interesting that you brought that up, because I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm going to go to the gym and it's going to be another lonely experience or whatever, but it is what you make. Again, going back to that. And for you, I know you compete and whatnot. When did that all start, and kind of what did that look like when it first started?
Mm-hmm. So the first time I did a bodybuilding competition was in 2014, so 10 years ago. And the sport was quite different at the time, I have to say. So I competed in INBA, was the federation, and I did fitness. And the reason I did it was because I had been training in the gym with a personal trainer and didn't really have any kind of set goal. And so my coach at the time, my trainer at the time, he suggested, oh, why don't you do a bodybuilding competition? And I guess I just wanted something to push me a little bit harder. I do like to have goals, and I like ticking things off and crossing things off of lists and things like that. I like to accomplish things. So I did it that year, and I enjoyed it. I do enjoy being on stage. I've been a dancer for most of my life, so very comfortable up under the lights. And so I did it that year, and then I moved away. So that's when I went to Indonesia for 5 years. And then so I moved back in 2020. And then in 2021, I decided to compete again. And again, I just wanted something to push myself. And I was a bit disappointed with my results that year. And so I decided to compete again last year in 2023. And so those two competitions were with ICN. And I did bikini, the bikini level in that. And I think for me, part of the reason why I enjoy doing it is because at some point I told myself that I couldn't. So I like when I catch myself saying that something that I can't do, I like to prove to myself that I can like literally do anything I want. If I want to do something enough, I can make it happen. And so, you know, at some point I would have said, oh, you could never look like that, or you could never stand on stage and look like that. So it's the, I guess, the belief in yourself, and by sticking to, you know, it's not easy competing, you know, bodybuilding or like competing in any sport. You know, I'm sure you can say the same thing with running, but it's the little bits of evidence that you bank up by following the program, following the plan, and making sure that you've done everything you can so that when that day comes and you're stood up on the stage, you know you've given it everything that you can.
Yeah, and that's quite powerful, I think. Like, it's not an easy thing, like you were saying. Maybe if you don't mind, delve into that, like the process and whatnot for people like myself who have no clue about the bodybuilding world out there. What does that process look like? Because it can be quite like you need to be quite honed in, I feel like. So what does that all look like, and what did it look like for you?
Yeah, so obviously it can look really different for every individual based on just, you know, genetics and, you know where they're at in life. So if I think about last year's prep and competition, so I had my coach, Jake Dedett, and he was basically in charge of figuring everything out for me. He was my brain and my best cheerleader. But so it's basically, you know, you're trying to build muscle and retain the muscle whilst dropping body fat. So you want to be lean enough that you can see the muscles underneath. So it's a balance between, you know, strength training, cardio training, and calorie intake. So, I was probably doing, if I can remember right, I would have been doing five resistance training sessions a week. So weights five times a week, and we would focus on different muscle groups, obviously, because you want to manipulate the body to look a certain way on stage. And then I did a 20-week prep. So I started in May through to October, and progressively I was doing more and more cardio to burn more calories. And, you know, you've got a certain amount of steps to do every day. And then we manipulate how many calories you take in. And obviously as comp got closer, that starts to come down in order to be able to be as lean as possible for stage. And so that means that I was weighing all my food and doing a lot of meal prep and things like that. Now, that part of it I didn't really mind, because I'm a very structured, organized person regardless. And for me, like, and even now, you know, it's been, well, like 7 months or something, I still meal prep. Like, that's just a normal part of my life. So I quite enjoy it. And, you know, the bodybuilding diet has come a long way. So, you know, back in 2014, it was like, you know, chicken and broccoli, fish and broccoli, egg whites. You know, it was very, very basic. Whereas now, especially with things like MyFitnessPal, where you can track everything, it's, and just, I guess, the way that people have learnt about nutrition in the meantime
I guess
as well.
There's more knowledge out there now.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the food that I was eating was much more enjoyable this time around for sure.
Yeah. because like that I guess makes or breaks, right? Like mentally and everything as well. Like, it is such a mental game. But I guess, you know, you've prepped, you get on stage. What's, I guess, the aftermath? Because I think, you know, you look a certain way, which is the sport in a sense. Mm-hmm. You've trained so like intently and whatnot to look the certain way. What does, I guess, the aftermath look like? Because a lot of people can't look like that for the rest of the year. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, you've hit this like dream physique for a lot of people, but then it's just kind of like, okay, what now, you know? So what was that for you?
Yeah, so honestly, the part after comp is for me mentally the most difficult. So I was very well supported by my coach, and we kind of do like almost like a reverse diet afterwards. So you can't just like finish comp, walk off stage, and then just go back to how you were eating 20 weeks ago, because it's not going to feel good, and you're probably just going to stack on a lot of body fat. So, which you don't want to do regardless. So it's a slow process to build your calories back up. But mentally, definitely the most difficult part. And I knew that it would be, obviously, because I've competed before. But you do get very used to being so lean, like unmaintainable lean, and you know that. But you know, I had to have some stern words with myself at multiple times, and you know, because I would be looking in the mirror and having to say to myself, what you're seeing isn't real. You know, you've maybe put on a kilo or something. You know, you're not obese. Like, let's just settle down, Lisa. And being able to have that support from the coach, and also like my coach had multiple people competing, so we had like a team. And so being able to talk to them and, you know, hear that other people were feeling the same was quite nice. But yeah, having my coach being able to be like, you know, remember, you know, this isn't maintainable, and, you know, remember how happy you were when, you know, you were a kilo, you know, heavier, but in the opposite direction, like as the weight was coming down. So just having that person to be able to talk to about it definitely helped. And yeah, it definitely, you know, there was definitely ups and downs throughout that journey. But, you know, getting back to the point where, you know, I'm starting to have more energy, and I'm starting to be able to lift heavier again, and those kind of things, they start to be the reward that you get internally, instead of being, you know, 17% body fat or 15% or whatever, I don't even remember, 8% body fat, whatever it was, like, it's a different reward.
Yeah. And I think like what you just mentioned, or what you said earlier, is quite important, because I know there's a lot of, I guess, younger people listening to the episode as well and the podcast. You know, you said like what you're looking in the mirror isn't real, but in a way, like, you know, you've put on this work, it is real, but it's not maintainable, right? So I think that's quite important, because with social media these days, like, you flick through, and if you're following whatever community you're following, the bodybuilding world or whatever, like, you're seeing just photos and photos of people in prep, but like, that's not exactly real, if you know what I mean. Like, they're focusing on their goal, but then they probably don't look like that the entire year or whatnot, and you don't really see that on social media. In a sense, you see the goods, but you don't see the prep or the bads or anything. So I quite appreciate you saying that, because I think like being that mindset is quite important, especially if you are younger, if you are wanting to get into health and fitness and things like that. But I guess, how long did it take for you to come out of that, I guess? You know, like, how long was that deload, in a sense?
Yeah. Look, probably, I probably needed a good 5 months for me to get to a place where I can say I was happy and not having to manage how I felt about my appearance. You know, so it's not, you know, and everybody is different. Yeah. So, like, I also kind of shot myself in the foot a little bit, because I went on a month-long vacation to America in December, January, where I was definitely not, you know, paying that much attention to what I was eating, and I wasn't as, you know, I wasn't at the gym as much and things like that. So that kind of helped me come back up to an even healthier weight, I suppose. Not that everything's, you know, worried about weight, but I guess, probably about five for me in my journey to get to a place where I was, comfortable.
Yeah. Okay.
You know?
Yeah. And was it like, because I know, like, I've had back when I was in Canada working in a gym, I knew somebody who competed as well. You know, she did pretty well and whatnot, but I guess that whole deload phase for her was quite traumatic in a sense mentally. And like you were saying, it's different for everybody. And just hearing her experience of how, you know, she's just given it up altogether. Like, she still trains in the gym for health and fitness and whatnot, but I guess the whole competing thing was quite traumatic. How was it for you in that regard? Like, do you have any plans to go back? And, you know, is there anything coming up for you?
Yeah. So, like, I loved the journey.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Last time around. And I think that was due to a few reasons. Definitely the support I had from my coach and his team of competitors made a huge difference. Also, the support of the community at the gym was incredible. But I was really doing it just for me. So all I wanted to do was look better than I did in 2021. So for me, I had won regardless of what had happened on the day. So I did place in all my categories. So placing is a top five. So I was really happy with how I did regardless. But I really enjoyed the process and what I learned about what I was capable of as a person. That I could do the hard things and that I could trust myself to keep the promises that I made to myself. You know, I would be on the Stairmaster, and I might have to do 45 minutes or something. I wasn't forced onto the Stairmaster. Yeah. It was a choice that I made for my cardio. But, you know, I'd be getting to like the 40-minute mark, and it's like 5 minutes left, and no one else would know if I got off the Stairmaster and didn't do the last 5 minutes. But the most important person would know, me. Like, I'd know. So what I learned about myself during that last prep, like, I think has really helped me to truly love myself and love what I'm capable of. So the plan is to hopefully compete again next year.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm not mentally ready to go back into a prep just yet. So hopefully next year, but also, you know, it's a huge commitment just for the prep, you know, being 20 weeks, and it does take over your life. So I don't know what's going to happen in between now and November, mm-hmm. I think it is. I'd need to start.
Okay. Yeah.
So hopefully, I'll grace the stage again next year.
Awesome.
I also love that part too.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. And what are you doing now, I guess, like, you know, to strengthen? Because I think, like you were saying, like, the your body is one thing, but your health and your mental state is another thing. Is there anything specifically that you like to practice on a day-to-day right now for your mental well-being?
Yeah, so I have some like non-negotiables around my mental health that I do most days, and these things are like really basic things that I think most people probably do but don't necessarily think of it in that way. And that, you know, I make sure I almost like think about myself as a plant in terms of like, have I had enough water? Have I eaten the right kind of things today? And, you know, have I got enough fresh air and vitamin D? Like, four very, very basic things. And then I like to make sure I've moved my body enough. So whether that's just going for a big walk or going to the gym, these are like just regular, normal, everyday things. There are days where I'll journal. So I like to journal because what it does is it allows me to like free up space in my brain if there's too much going on. Just by writing things down, it's like I'm able to scoop it out of my head. If my anxiety is starting to play up a little bit, I like to do crossword puzzles. because usually with my anxiety, it's that like I can't quieten down the voice that's inside. So if I'm focused on a certain task like crosswords, my brain has to make a choice. So it's either going to be going over the anxious thoughts or it's having to focus on the crossword puzzle because it can't do both at the same time. So that is something that works really well for me if I just need to give my brain a break, which sounds silly that I'm then doing work. Yeah. But yeah, crossword puzzles are a really good one for me. Yeah,
awesome. Okay. And I know you mentioned like why you got into your podcast and whatnot, but mm-hmm. speak to when that started and kind of the process with that and maybe delve a little bit more into what you've been working on with that.
Mm-hmm. So I started the podcast when was it? June 2022. So it had been an idea that I'd had for a little while, but just had no idea how to do any of the things. I'd never had a podcast before. I didn't know what I needed to do it. And I was really lucky because I actually walked into a JB Hi-Fi store and I'd psyched myself up and said, you just have to go in and just look at it. Just look at the microphones. You don't have to buy anything. And the gentleman that came over to help me asked me why I was looking at podcast stuff. And I told him the idea. And he proceeded to come to my house every week for the next 4 weeks and teach me everything I needed to know to start the podcast. So the idea behind the podcast was that I wanted to be able to do what my friend at the bar had done for me for as many people as possible. So the idea is that we share our story with the hope that there's someone out there who needs to hear it, you know, and to give them some, I guess, to give them some hope that they're not the only one who's going through whatever it is that they're going through. So I have guests that come on and they talk through their own mental health journey from maybe where it started through to its worst and then the things that they do to take care of themselves. And I've been so lucky to meet so many wonderful people and so many people have been so open in sharing with me and the listeners. And so, yeah, it's been almost 2 years now and I record from my kitchen studio. So it's very much a passion project and something that has, added a lot of value to my life mm-hmm. and yep. I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah, awesome. Well, congrats with that because I have listened to a couple episodes myself and I think it is quite powerful having guests and offering that safe space, you know, like it is quite a testament to what you're doing because it's quite difficult, I think, having people speak about their mental well-being and whatnot. So congrats with all of that. But the podcast will be in the show notes. So definitely check that out. Before we get into the vulnerability corner, Lisa, do you mind sharing with the guests your socials? Where can people find you? Where can people find your or follow your journey and whatnot? And I'll post those all in the show notes as well.
Beautiful. Yes. So the podcast is called High Tide, Low Tide. And the name for that kind of came from just the idea that, you know, life is like the ocean in that it's forever, you know, we're experiencing high tides and low tides and it's forever changing and that we just need to sort of learn a little bit about when we need to strap ourselves in and when we need to learn to sort of let go and go with the flow. So it's available on all your major streaming services. So you can get it on Spotify, Apple, Google, all those places. And on Instagram, you can find me at High Tide, Low Tide AU. And I've got a Facebook page as well, okay. But I don't know. Does anyone use Facebook anymore? Yeah,
no idea. I don't, but yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Or you can find me on LinkedIn as well. Okay. Lisa Scanlon is LESSA, but all awesome. That info will be in cool. the show notes.
It'll all be in the show notes. So definitely check that out. Now I've already gone into the vulnerability corner with you. There is 5 questions here, Lisa. These are of course questions that I know all of you listeners have already heard from all of the other guests, but I find it's quite interesting to hear different different, I guess, answers to the questions, to the kind of same questions that everybody has. So I'll let you pick a number from 1 to 5 and we can get started with the vulnerability corner.
Oh, I looked at these beforehand and now I can't remember what any of them were. Maybe was it 1 or 5? Is there one you want me to answer?
Nah, they're all random.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Aren't they in order?
No.
Oh, no. Yeah. Okay, we'll go to number 2 because 2 is my favorite number.
Okay. So 2 is, what makes you look down on other people, and what do you think makes other people look down on you? And this doesn't necessarily need to be what you look down. Yeah. It could be like anything, really. Like,
okay, so what makes me look down on other people? So I try my very best to be as understanding of other people, and that, you know, if they are behaving in a certain way or doing certain things, why? Or like, you know, is there a reason why that person is behaving that way? And try to have an understanding of maybe what's led that person to do that. But I guess what would make me look down on someone else is perhaps if they're treating other people poorly. I don't like that. A very lame example of that is the way if someone talks to like someone in a service role poorly, having worked in hospitality for many years, that would make me look down on someone. I try really hard not to do that though.
But that's a very fair one.
And what do you think makes other people look down on you? Sometimes, and this could be a projection of my own, I think that maybe someone might look down on me for maybe the way I present myself on social media. I try to be very authentic, and you know, not everyone maybe enjoys how much I show up on the social media, perhaps. Or, you know, I post a lot of gym selfies on social media. Or the other day I posted a photo from a photo shoot I did after my competition. So perhaps people might view that as attention seeking, or, you know, doing it for the likes or something like that. Whereas the way that I see it, the way that I present myself on social media, is just me being me, and trying to, I don't know, not inspire is not the right word, but like encourage other people to do the same thing. And that, like, if you like something about you, then it's okay to like something about you. We have so, like, I feel like for so many years of my life, I've had to, you know, dull something down, or, you know, the whole tall poppy syndrome thing, especially within Australia. If I'm proud of something that I've done, I'm going to share that and I'm going to talk about it. But again, it could be misconceived potentially as attention seeking. No, but like, that doesn't affect my life.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And that's a good one, because it's your social media. You know what I mean? Like, there's always the unfollow button or whatnot. As somebody who posts all the time myself as well, I think that's quite an eye opener, you know, that other people feel that way, because it's your social media. You know what I mean? Like, you can post whatever you want, really. So, but no, thank you for that. Really, I know these are hard questions, but
I tried to prepare myself well.
I know, and you get random, really. Yeah. But Lisa, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Again, everybody, you can listen to the show notes or read the show notes, and click her podcast, go listen to it. You can follow her journey and whatnot there. But thank you for coming on. Yeah.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. And now I've got another new friend at the gym.
At the gym, yeah. I know. It's funny. We were saying, oh, I know you from the gym, but like, have never spoken before. But now we will, yeah.
Excellent.
Awesome. All righty, everybody. Thank you all for listening to today's episode. If you haven't already done so, hit that 5-star button in Spotify or Apple Podcasts. I know Spotify is now allowing you to do that, so please do that, because it is something new and it definitely helps out Radiant Voices Media as well as this podcast. Thank you all for listening, and I will talk to you into the next episode.